to Ask an Atheist, a weekly educational call-in program dedicated to atheism, skeptical inquiry, and the separation of church and state. We are live from Scan Studios in Seattle every Sunday, 3 p.m. Pacific time, and we're archived online at www.askanatheist.tv. My name is Casey Dorn, and my Chewbacca this time, Mike Gillis. How's it going, Mike? This is the first time we've been back together for quite some time, actually. It's been months.
I've missed you, Mike. it's been since the sixth episode, I think it was. Spiritual is a nonsense word. It's a long time ago.
That's right.
2 months.
It's been a long time. I've missed you. Let's get the regular stuff out of the way. Again, if you're an atheist, agnostic, or free thought group in the state of Washington, and you want us to pimp your show, just send us an email at our form at www.atheist.tv, and we'll try to, exactly, that's the Wally George. Call this number right here, and then we'll get it out on the air and hopefully increase awareness of all the stuff going around in our area.
That's a big part of the show, is that we want to not only just promote ourselves, but there are a lot of atheist and agnostic free thought groups out there that are doing a lot of good work. The one thing we can do, we can get the word out, but we're not a community, and a lot of these groups are. So if you feel alone, these are the people to hook up with.
Right, absolutely. And on a little bit of a housekeeping note for sure, we've said this for the past few programs, but the studio that basically gives us studio time, the airwaves, equipment, training, Scan is under budget crisis now. They might have their budget of $650,000 slashed to $100,000, or maybe slashed altogether. So this is unfortunate for anyone who enjoys this program or anyone who enjoys public access in the city of Seattle and environs, because what it means is that the one community resource where people like us, people with a perspective that's not normally
represented
or seen on television, will basically fall away and live only on the internet, which is part of the reason why we have this show terrestrially and not just on the internet.
I think it's important to note that there is a difference between having an internet show and having a show over the airwaves. We have a greater opportunity to reach people who aren't necessarily looking for this show.
Right.
That there is an atheist quarter of the internet, which still most people don't even ever look at. I mean, unless you go directly looking for it. This is, again, why I'm an advocate of things like brick-and-mortar bookstores over something like, say, Amazon.com, is that honestly, usually when you find anything on Amazon, it's because it's related in some way to something you've searched for before. It becomes really hard in the same way that when you wander through a bookstore, you can come across something that you didn't even know you were looking for, didn't know you wanted, but wow, this is really neat. That's a real opportunity with television, is that there are a lot of people that wouldn't go looking into the atheist quarter of the internet will hear our arguments and see us not as some stereotype that their pastor creates, but as actual people. And then whether you like us or dislike us, it'll be because of who we are rather than what you've heard about us. I think it's really important to keep public access going, because generally speaking, the only people who disagree with us, theists, or that go looking into the atheist quarter of the of the internet are generally only internet gunslingers that are going looking for a fight. I'd like to get that message out more. And even then, even people who are on the fence or aren't necessarily looking for a fight, even those that look at things like books that are released on a wide scale, like Richard Dawkins' God Delusion, a lot of people who judge him don't actually read the book.
Right.
It's really hard. That's the fun thing with television, is you can actually cut through channels. And while you're not watching, you know, the golf or bowling or whatever's going on Sunday afternoon, you swim by us and actually find what you hear interesting.
And the great thing about Scan is that it's a resource where anyone, not just atheists, but obviously the majority of the program you're going to see on Sunday is going to be mostly theist programming. And, you know, that's something that I'd actually want to support that. We're not so dogmatic. We'll talk about being dogmatic
a little bit later.
But we're not so dogmatic that we would really like that all the other religious programs on Scan are replaced with secular programs. No, I mean, I think that's the beauty of democracy, and that's the beauty of a democratizing media like public access, for all of its warts and what have you. It's great, and it's great that it allows us this position. So basically, Scan has up on their own website, and if we can get the website up there, it is. Oh, wow. ScanTV.org. They have a number of ways of which you can help out, telling the city of Seattle, the city council, and the mayor that it's important to you, that the perspectives are important, and to take away a community resource like this is really silencing the people who have worked, who like us and our crew and every other show that runs out of Scan Studios, take their voice away to a great degree. So write a letter or show up to one of the rallies, one of the city council meetings or rallies, and hopefully we can find a way to save Scan and save our show.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So moving on, I think we can go for news. I think you've got the first news story.
Yes, tonight. I've got a news story. This is out of Montana. Again, going to questions of free speech and tolerance. Montana woman attacks blasphemous artwork. Wednesday afternoon, a Montana woman charged into a Colorado art gallery bearing a crowbar and a single purpose, to destroy someone else's private property because she found it offensive. She succeeded in her goal. Hero and martyr to some, over-the-road truck driver Kathleen Folden of Kalispell, Montana, had doubtless seen accounts of the prints on display at the Loveland Museum Gallery in Loveland, Colorado, declaring it pornographic and sacrilegious. She knew that the work by San Francisco artist Enrique Chacoga had brought protesters for 6 previous days to the local Catholic church, St. John the Evangelist. Donning a t-shirt proclaiming, "My Savior is tougher than nails," Folden arrived at the gallery shortly after the Catholic protesters dispersed for the day. Wielding a crowbar, she charged into the facility, located the display holding the controversial print, and began bashing the plexiglass, screaming, "Filth! Filth! Filth!" If we can get a picture of image one up and get right. An idea of this is what she was attacking.
It's a little hard to see in the image itself, but...
there we go.
It looks like they just took a pastiche of comic strips and cartoon images, and I think there's one that has Jesus' head on like a bikini or something. A bikini torso. Which is, you know, silly in and of itself. But
yeah, successfully breaking into the case, Folden tore off a foot-long section of the print, which supposedly depicted the cartoon Jesus receiving oral sex from another man. Jesus' love is clearly being spread around.
Right.
Retreating into a corner, muttering, "How can you desecrate my Lord?" Folden tore a section of the print into tiny pieces, awaiting the police, basically lying on the ground as if crucified.
We should finish the story.
I mean, clearly there are better ways, one, to respond to something that offends you. This is the price of free speech in a free society,
right.
Is that occasionally somebody is going to say something you don't like. Deal with it. That is it. There are things that we say that piss people off, and there are things that other people say that piss me off. I'm sorry. That's the cost of it. I get the right to speak, but you know what? So do Glenn Beck and Ann Coulter and Fred Phelps and Pat Robertson. You know, too bad. I'm going to have to live with it. I have the way to respond to that with free speech of my own, but I don't have the right to respond through it through violence. It's amazing, though, because, I mean, this is something we've seen a lot of with the atheist billboard campaigns that have been going up, which is theist vandals putting messages up on there that they just can't handle somebody having their voice added to sort of this national conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't enough that they basically... I wouldn't say they have a straight-up monopoly, but certainly there are a hell of a lot more billboards up there with Christian or church messages out there than there are with often ones that are completely innocuous, just simply saying, we exist, we are capable of being just as moral as you are, and if you agree with us, here's a place where you can find like-minded people and not be alone. And apparently that's incredibly offensive to the point of that. But even with something like this, which is edgy, the Catholic protesters who dispersed before you went kill crazy with a crowbar, they were doing it right. That's the response. If you don't like it, you can state it. And
yeah, they could have even protested in front of the art gallery. I mean, that would have been an acceptable form of speech.
That's perfectly fine. That's you have the right to object to what somebody says on whatever grounds you want. You don't have the right to take that person's speech away.
Right. Well, and not only that, but you also don't have the right to destroy someone else's property because something about that property offends you. And this is why I think you and I were talking about this before. This leads very well into the Quran burning, idea, which is that there are a lot of people who are sort of opposed to it on very visceral grounds, where burning books is, that's not, you know, only people with small minds burn books, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it was also burning a book that had a lot of significance to a certain point of people. But I think you and I agreed on this, in a very fundamental First Amendment way, If Terry Jones's free speech was burning a Quran, as long as he owned that Quran.
Yeah, he's burning his own property. It's
right.
important to mention
that. As long
that.
As he's destroying his own property, then he has the right to do so.
If she wants to destroy this thing with a crowbar and tear it up into little pieces, she should buy it.
Yeah, that's...
Then it is her property, and she can do whatever she wants with it. He got his check, whatever. It's like the same thing. It's like, I mean, even if it was something that was very, very old, we discussed about this before.
Right.
Like, for instance, what if this was a copy, if Terry Jones was burning a copy of the Quran from, like, the first century?
Right.
I would object to that just on based on the item's historical significance. Certainly a lot of things don't live that long.
Right.
Not live, but survive that long, especially things printed on paper. But I would have no right to stop him. The
sure.
same way I object to when the Taliban destroyed those Buddhist statues, not because
right.
I believe in any of the supernatural claims made by that, but simply right. because this has historical value. This stuff is priceless. Very few things survive to being 1,000 years old.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess there's some play in this discussion about whether or not...
The Taliban wants to buy them, though.
Well, whether or not the guy who made this, the San Francisco artist made this, you can consider it art or not. I mean, those are... I think there was a similar outcry over the Dung Mary, the
yeah.
Dung Mary painting, where it's, you know, where of course we can, art is a slippery idea, and we can debate about whether or not something is not art and is just meant to incite, meant to offend.
But even that's a right to free speech.
Sure, absolutely. And whether or not speech is valid doesn't depend on whether or not there's a universal agreement as to whether or not something is, you know, valid enough to be free speech. So.
Yeah, yeah, it's one of those things that, yes, I'm sorry it offends you, but you know what? Anything, even the most innocuous-seeming thing in the world, is going to be offensive to somebody. And part of living in a society where we have to coexist with people who hold very different ideas from us is you're going to have to learn to deal with it. Be an adult.
Yeah. I can't believe we have to keep saying this.
I know.
How many times have we got on been on this program and had to say the exact same thing, is to tell people to stop acting like children
yeah.
and to do what you would in the schoolyard, which is... Someone calls you names, you don't hit them or destroy something of theirs, you turn around and walk away. You turn
yeah.
around and walk away.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, too, and I think this is an important point to make, is that this is a point that we have to make to both liberals and conservatives in this country, that generally it's the conservatives that go kill crazy whenever somebody, you know, says something bad about Jesus, but generally whenever, the problem you have to talk to... liberals, though, is generally they have this weird blind spot when it comes to Islam in this one thing.
Yeah.
That suddenly it becomes suddenly racist or horrible. It's like I don't see any of the people who were screaming about everybody draw Muhammad Day getting angry about this print.
Right.
And generally, if most of them said that, they'd get angry at the woman with the crowbar.
Or getting angry about the uncountable ways in the popular culture where Jesus is mocked, you know.
Yeah.
It happens all the time.
So
all the time.
When Muhammad gets to join the club and be made fun of as well, that isn't Islam being singled out or being persecuted. That's Islam joining our community. That is part of being part of this society, that you are included. You're not getting a special set of rules.
Right.
That you are part of this. You are one of us. You are our equal.
Speaking of someone who's part of our, I think we've got a telephone call now. Daniel from Federal Way, do we have you, Daniel?
Hello.
Hey, Daniel.
Hey, Daniel.
How's it going?
Very good.
What have you got for us today?
Do atheists have a religion or?
You know, Daniel, you may want to turn down your television.
Yeah, it can be a little bit confusing. Just turn the television off and just pay attention to the phone.
I got my television on mute.
Perfect.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, do atheists have a religion?
Most
of
us...
Or they just believe in nothing?
No, we don't... Okay, there's two questions in there. The first one, do we have a religion? Most of us, no. Atheism is just a philosophical position on one point, whether gods exist. There are some people who have a religion but don't believe in God. In fact, a lot of
Buddhists, for example.
Yeah, a lot of Buddhists don't believe in gods. Some Buddhists do. I don't have a religion. I don't have this sort of set of ontological claims talking about things that are supernatural or mystical origins of the universe or anything like that. There are many philosophies I hold to, and on that count, I wouldn't say I believe in nothing. I would say I probably believe in most of the things you do, just not deities or gods.
Well, you're crazy because I'm a Satanist.
No, I'm going to take that as you're a Satanist and we're crazy.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, a lot of people would say the same thing about you. I mean, a lot of people would take the, I think we've said this before on this program, I don't view Satanists as really all that distinct from Christians because they believe basically in the same supernatural universe.
Yeah, I think it's just silly. A lot. I mean, no offense, but it comes across as very childish and contrarian. I guess, why are you a Satanist and what do you believe, Daniel?
Oh. We lost him. You called him silly. That was the problem. We don't think...
We were crazy.
Yeah, that's true. He did insult us first. Well, it wasn't quite a drive-by Satan-ing. That was sort of a slow walk.
Lurching. It was, it was like having a George Romero zombie coming after you. The inevitable Satan-ing is coming.
Well, I think I should point out, because she gave me the high sign when we were talking about this, we actually do have a member of our studio audience and a regular crew member who is an atheist and who is a secular Jew as well. So she has a religion, and
well, there's
she's
a culture.
Also an atheist.
Well, Judaism is a bit more broad. It's a much broader category than most religions, because there's also the cultural standpoint, an ethnicity standpoint,
right.
And then there's the religion. There's a lot of people who are secular Jews who don't have any of the religion, they don't keep kosher, they don't practice any of this stuff, but they have sort of a Jewish identity.
Right. And there are, of course, other strange tangents to Christianity that we've talked about before. The Raelians, of course.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if people would be able to say it with a straight face, being a Raelian, but, they're an example of someone who doesn't
believe
in gods and has a religion.
If you don't know, the Raelians are a Texas-based UFO cult. That in the year 2000, I believe it was, they actually claimed that they had successfully cloned a human child. And when the press asked them for evidence, they went, no, no, we're not giving you that. So then the press stopped talking to them. But it was kind of famous because they had this weird, crazy lady that it would send out. She kind of looked like the cat lady from The Simpsons a bit. And they sent her out to talk, and the press was just so amused by her.
Yeah.
So...
Well, thank you for calling, Daniel. We want anyone, even Satanists among you, to call in. I would actually like someone who is a Satanist to call in and explain to us how that their belief is all that distinct from Christianity.
Seriously. It's like reverse Christianity.
Yeah.
Reverse vampires.
So the second story I have, which is the headline is, Berkeley jail target of lawsuit, Bible is only reading material allowed according to magazine editor. This is Monk's Corner. I assume this is Berkeley. I assume. Berkeley County Sheriff Wayne DeWitt and county jail officers are being sued over denying inmates access to reading materials other than the Bible. The lawsuit alleges that the jail does not deliver publications and some letters to inmate cells, violating the First Amendment rights of speech. And this is a member of the ACLU quoting, "We're supposed to be trying to rehabilitate these people and equip them so that they can return to society as safer and better citizens. Denying their right to have access to information about legal issues and society impedes their reentry." And the unfortunate part about this is that I can't find a rebuttal or any sort of statement from the county or the sheriff or the prison itself. So I think they're keeping this under wraps because I think this
is embarrassing.
No, it's completely embarrassing. I think the thing here is that Mike and I what it doesn't say is whether or not this is a public jail or a private prison. But in either case, these
really
are wards of the state, right?
Yes,
you're a ward of the state, and you of course can't be. Your free speech rights can't be violated. You can't be forced to just read one book. I mean, they might be able to be forced to have no reading material whatsoever.
Yeah, but when you only provide one, which is a sectarian religious text, clearly that is a violation of the separation of church and state. It's basically saying this one is good. So I can have my religious text, provided I'm a Christian and that's the translation I like. However, if I'm a Jew, a Muslim, a Buddhist, a Hindu, an atheist, anything, I can't have anything that speaks to me religiously or philosophically. And by default, that is basically de facto the prison basically having an...
Endorsing.
Endorsing and sort of making an official religious stance.
Right.
That it can't have. I don't care if it's a private prison or not. Those, like you said, they're wards of the state. It's not like a private school. It's not like you can choose, like, I want to go to the Christian prison. It just doesn't work that way. I'm sorry. It's... But it's amazing. And the thing, though, is that the people who do a lot of stuff, like you said, they didn't have an official response, because any response they give is going to look bad. There is no justification for that. And honestly, in this country, Christianity has had such a free ride from criticism and It's weird ability to be treated as sort of this default status for everybody unless you state something else has gone unanswered for so long. That honestly is what is important about, one, the atheist movement, is to sort of point out that Christian privilege and say, no, your rights are not being violated if you're not, you don't have the ability to enforce them on other people. And it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, I wish there was more to this story, but I think it said actually here that this same prison, this is actually the 12th similar suit being filed on to this particular prison, I think. So this is obviously not the first time this has actually happened, and I'm wondering why it's still happening. But more on this story. We'll keep tracking this story for you, our viewers. So I think the next is, you're going to start as the next one?
Yes, this is our next one. This is actually...
We're going to do a duel. For your theatrical pleasure here, we're going to both assume the roles of two actors in this the scenario.
Acting! Yeah, this actually comes by way of Pharyngula, basically the P.Z. Myers website. This comes from a website called The Chive. I've never actually heard. I guess it's another one of the many, you know, nerdy, you know, humor sites on the website. Basically, they got an email about a piece of artwork that they put up recently on their website. If you can put up image number two on there. That was a piece of artwork that they put up there. Jesus is saying, "Tell them about the time I fought the dragon." That never happened, Jesus. Lol, tell them anyway. Now, somebody was not happy about this at all, and playing the role tonight of the pastor will be Casey Doran.
Sir or madam, my name is Stephen, and I'm the pastor of Calvary Blank Church in Blank. Recently, one of our parishioners brought a shocking picture to my attention. One of your staff has sketched a horrible picture, Jesus ordering a preacher to tell his flock about the time he fought a dragon. This photo is seething blasphemy of the highest order, and I demand its removal from your, quote, website.
Is he trying to imply that it's not really a website?
It's clearly not good enough to be a website. Jesus would never instruct a man of the cloth to mislead his people in such a manner. Please update me when the photo is taken down. And then he has his signature, says, is a quote from Mark, "But he shall blaspheme against the Holy Ghost hath never forgiveness." Go ahead.
This is the response from the Chive website. Stephen, nice to meet you. Here at the Chive, we don't have any artists on staff that draw pictures. That sketch is actually from the Bible, specifically the updated illustrated New American Standard Bible, 1995. It's a lesser-known parable from the book of Matthew, talking about how Jesus had a sense of humor and liked to prank locals on his days off. Here is another photo. Let me see here. Put up image number three. Ah, yes. Found it. I'll attach and post it on the Chive tomorrow. So full of wind. Thanks for the reminder, Stephen. Now, that's a woman giving a haircut to somebody and Jesus standing over her shoulder, and Jesus says, "Do a Batman symbol." She's like, "Go away, Jesus." At the bottom of that, he has a quote of his own rather than something from the Bible. He simply has a quote, "Ray, when someone asks you if you're a god, you say yes." And that's from Winston Zeddemore.
Ghostbusters. Excellent. Well, this is one of those great things that... there's more, right?
Yes, this is the response.
This is the pastor's response. "John, do not attempt to post any more incendiary Jesus photos, or you will face the united protest of our parishioners, and we will put your website under immediate scrutiny using any/all available resources." Which resources? "This is not a battle worth fighting. Jesus is not here to be satirized for the amusement of heathens."
Again, we live in a free society. Deal with it. It's just bizarre. So anyways, we actually have another phone call. Rich from Shoreline, what have you for us today?
Well, guys, I'm listening to, obviously, a show. You guys are very articulate. It's all good. Our gentleman about the Satanist, and I'm neither a Satanist nor, an atheist, but I'm not really a believer either. So anyway, the point I'm going to make is that while contemplating all of the different things, the universe and why are we here and all these different things, I get to thinking about the Bible and then about, again, people who might believe in Satanism or Christianity or whatever. I think about the Bible as any other history book, and it's always written by the people who win the wars. So if you want to take the Satanist point of view that, well, okay, you're going to follow Satanism, he's just the poor guy who maybe won, lost a war, if there in fact was one, between God and Satan. And he's just a poor schmuck that lost the war. So guess what? God gets to write the history book. And so, you know, people always get down on Satanists or they get down on Christians or whatever. And you look at the world we live in, and the history books that we follow, they simply are written by the guy that won the war. The other person on the other side wasn't the bad guy. He just lost the war.
I can see that. I know that that was something that Howard Zinn with his People's History of the United States was to write history from the perspective of not necessarily the people who won.
Right.
But the difference between, say, the conflict between Columbus and the Arawaks is that we have evidence that Columbus and the Arawaks actually existed. I tend to find Satanism silly. Obviously, I don't think any of this stuff is real because there's a lack of sufficient evidence to prove any of the ontological claims they're making.
I agree.
But on the other hand, a lot of people that I've talked to who tend to be Satanists tend to be sort of rejecting something just to be provocative.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, it isn't like there's something about Satan that just, you know, grabs their heart and makes them want to take Satan into their home or, you know, any of that usual nonsense that people kind of spout out. But all I see is basically a need to sort of rebel, and it just comes across as sort of childish and silly.
And it's not to say that that there aren't people who could have possibly been taking it seriously, and that there are people who have a sincere belief about the tenets of Satanism, whatever they may be. I'm woefully ignorant about precisely what the sort of post-LaVey Satanism actually represents as far as a lifestyle.
Most of the Satanists, at least the people who proclaim Satan or in some way, usually do it in a tongue-in-cheek manner, too.
Yeah.
Sort of in a, you know, Tenacious D sort of like, hail Satan, you know, heavy metal sort of way.
But that doesn't dismiss the fact that there might be actual Satanists. I mean, sincere Satanists and not kind of rebellious youths and just people who are doing it ironically. As far as reading a narrative and then trying to read its counter-narrative, Beowulf and Grendel are probably much more entertaining than reading the Satanist Bible and the regular Bible.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're just talking about stories, and I think that we are just talking about stories.
Yeah, there's actually
there are more interesting ways to view a conflict.
Yeah, there's also the children's book that shows the wolf's perspective on the three little pigs. That's what Wicked is. Basically the witch's perspective on the Wizard of Oz.
Right. But nobody
really takes that as, you know, well, that's the thing, is that no one else accepts any of these other things like Grendel and Beowulf as history.
Mm-hmm.
For me, a lot of it is, regardless of the ethical value of these various religions, the only thing that really matters to me is if it's true or not.
Yeah.
Well, and you're right about that. The only thing that matters is whether it's true or not. But then as a human psyche, we can believe in things as long as it doesn't harm or misguide us, right?
Well, if you're believing in something false, isn't that... I'm sorry to interrupt. If you're believing something false, isn't that necessarily misguiding yourself?
Well, it is and it isn't. I mean, if you believe it to the point where it causes you to make decisions that change your life and causes you to view other people in, say, bad ways, then sure, it's a bad thing. But if it allows you to, say, live in, what's that phrase, looking at life through rose-colored glasses, as long as it helps you in your little walk through this world that we live in without, again, adversely affecting your rational decision-making abilities, right?
Let people live
and let live, right?
I think we always say, I think there's this sort of thing said where there are people who talk about their own faith, usually in Christianity, and this is in America, where they say, well, you know, I believe that I get my sense of right or wrong from God, and if I didn't have God, then I would just go around killing and stealing. And
I don't believe them when they say that.
Though. I don't believe them either, but, you know, this falls into the category of, well, I don't want religion to be abolished from the earth, because if that were true, I would much rather you believe in a God than don't, if you not having God in your life meant that you'd went around and murder everyone. I am with you in that I don't agree that that's actually ingenuous.
I don't think that's true. I think that if most people who believed in a God and they felt they got their morality from that God got evidence tomorrow that it wouldn't, I think most people would act pretty much the same as they do now.
Right.
I think that clearly people don't get their morality from these books because there's some really horrible things in these books that even fundamentalists don't follow.
Yeah.
And I think that's clearly an example of somebody projecting their own morality on the book rather than receiving morality from it. And I'd say also that I do think that there is a harm, Rich, in having a non-evidence-based thing of life. It doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to go on an inquisition,
right. But
it can also make me a sap, that if I believe, for instance, in something without evidence, somebody can basically sell me the proverbial magic beans. Like, for instance, in Iraq right now, there are Iraqi cops that are buying, I don't know if you're familiar with what a dowsing rod is?
I am.
They're buying.
I've heard of one. Sure.
Basically, it's a hunk of plastic or wire or rope.
Water.
Yeah, you find water. Except there's an American company that's selling Iraqi cops.
Yeah.
One that's supposed to find car bombs.
Oh my gosh.
And
oh my
it's gosh. Basically they're selling them for about I think it's like $800 a pop.
Right.
Somebody's going to get killed over that. Not only that, at the very least, even if nobody got blown up, they're still getting ripped off.
Well, now, you see, and here's the point. I absolutely agree with you where that is a belief, a false belief, that will cause pain and harm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all have the elderly grandmother who, oh, that's just Grandma Munna. Let her believe whatever she wants to believe. It makes her happy. She's not harming anyone. Now, again, I agree with you. In a functioning society, we all have to act with good information and, like you say, provable science information.
Yeah.
So, again, the problem with religion is that we're claiming it to be, I say we, society in general, claims it to be factual science, factual real stuff, as opposed to it's just something that makes me feel better. It's something that kind of makes me this way.
Okay.
I still believe in science, gravity, magnetism, you know, those things.
There's one thing, Rich, that I would throw in there is that bad ideas or non-evidence-based ideas don't always exist in isolation. And that essentially, if you treat your methodology for determining whether a fact is true or false, I think of it as sort of a screen door that keeps bad things out. I still get air into the room, but not bugs. The problem with having big gaping holes where bad ideas like that come in is that these things, like I said, don't exist in isolation. That, yes, Jesus may have stopped me from drinking and may have made me a better husband. But there's something that comes with it, that a lot of times it might make somebody much more socially intolerant of women or homosexuals or
mostly just more incredulous.
I think being
gullible is the part that it is the most harm.
When you're
on the pattern of believing things without much evidence, then you are susceptible to believing just about anything.
Yeah, it becomes like you said, then the holes in the screen door are wide, anything can sort of get in, including harmful ideas. That if there isn't this immediate going, okay, wait, where's the evidence for this? Because there are things that are... That's another thing that Sam Harris says, is that even where religion or faith-based ideas get you to do a good thing, it's getting you to do a good thing for a bad reason, where there are good reasons that actually exist.
Right.
And... usually that sort of feeling doesn't, like I said, it doesn't come in isolation. It's going to have, it's a Trojan horse for a lot of other things that are sort of inevitable. I'd say that even a seemingly positive feeling based on some sort of faith-based, mystical idea has, any one of them has potential harm attached to it, if you get what I mean.
And again, I'm going to go back to what I'm saying with the idea that saying what I'm saying about believing this thing in quotation marks, that I accept it to be the fact that it's not a provable thing. It's not a real thing. I believe in evidence. I believe that, you know, even if you want to claim there is a quote-unquote God or a quote-unquote some kind of connectivity with all living matter, the table you guys are sitting at is living matter. It's moving energy. You and I are moving energy. And so we all are connected. And what are we connected by? Well, once upon a time, maybe people said it's God, you know, and that's the short phrase that we use for it. So is it really God, or is it that we are all connected? And the fact that we want to call it one thing or another, sure, those are made-up tales, you know, the boogeyman, the Santa Claus, and all these different things. Let's get back to now the fact that we're all connected. Can that make me a better person?
Well,
can that make me feel more connected to my fellow man?
I certainly am not going to decry someone's belief system if it has the tendency to bring people together, but for the reasons that we said before, it can also do harm. The assertion that we're all connected...
And if the fact does harm, you're right.
Right. Yeah. Well, the assertion, though, and we'll, we're going to have to wrap this up real quick, Rich.
Go.
The assertion that we're all connected, I think it depends on in what way you're... I mean, we are connected, meaning that all of the elements that make up our bodies and everything that makes up our brains and what ourselves are shared in common. We're all, as Sagan would say, made of star stuff. We're basically all made of the same elements. We're all in the same. We're on the same planet.
We're
plugged into roughly the same cultures and some of the same influences. But are we, I mean, on what sense are we connected in a more broad ethereal way? I think a lot of theists and a lot of people will want to say, well, you know, there's a spirit or there's something else that we belong to that's ineffable and can't be quantified. That's the part where we're connected in some ways.
In a biological sense.
Right. We are connected. If you want to take it beyond the things that I think we have evidence for, then I think that I'll disagree with you and say, we're connected, but what does that mean? I mean, right. Yeah.
Hey, guys, thanks for taking so much time. Great show.
Thank you, Rich. Thanks for calling in.
Keep it up. Appreciate it.
Have a good day.
All right.
That was a nice conversation.
Let's just skip yoga.
Skip yoga today.
Yes, let's skip yoga today.
Yoga flame.
I'm feeling limber enough. So the topic for today is viewer calls and emails, and luckily we've actually got two great calls before that.
Right off the bat.
Even if the first was a lurch by Satan-ing.
Lurch by Satan-ing. remember, you got to shoot him in the head. That's what puts him down.
For the head. So we were sort of, you and I were going through all of our emails. We've done an email show, and we do get emails, and some of them are interesting. Some of them are just sort of attaboy emails. But we have one viewer who's came back again and again and again to give us emails, and he is, of course, the now infamous Gary Burgin.
Yeah.
He's from Sheffield, right?
Sheffield, UK. Gary, I really don't know if you like us or not, Gary, because you've given us emails where you declare us that we've made a terrible enemy this day, and you have other emails where you seem to really like us. I'm not really sure. I don't know. On some level, I know it's not very likely that thinking might skin us and wear our clothes as a our skin is clothes.
Yes, right.
But
it puts the lotion on its skin,
or else it gets a hose again. I'm not gonna. We kick Gary around, not because we. He's technically a fan, but
right.
Gary is wrong on a lot of things. As Sam Mulvey, one of our hosts, likes to say, that if you do atheism dogmatically, you're doing it wrong. Fortunately, that seems to be how Gary does it. We have a little bit of a recent email exchange from Gary. To get an idea of how often Gary emails us, we don't normally like, hey, let's pick on this email writer that we got. The last time Gary emailed us, he emailed us 5 times before we had opened it. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Swingers, yes. Where a character gets a girl's phone number, calls her up, and the answering machine runs out of time before he finishes, so he calls her back, calls back, and calls back, and eventually she just picks up the phone and says, never call me again. Gary basically did that to us with email.
Right.
And let's get a little piece of what Gary has done.
I'm only going to read a little bit about this. He says, the atheist programs, and I think he's referring to us and to atheist experience, talk about critical thinking and free thought. I've contacted you and have rung in, but you've called me dogmatic, and on YouTube messages I've been called a Nazi and a Stalin lover. It's just that any time people mention God, faith, or religion, to me, I see those white sheets of Omar he's talking about, an IRA bombing in the 80s, I think, and carpets of bodies in Africa, or the trucks of bodies being dumped on the doorsteps of NATO peacekeeping forces in Bosnia. I agree with you when you say that I turn my brain off, as it is the only way to deal with religion.
That's the thing I find just bizarre, is that one thing that Gary's done with us a number of times is that he basically says that we have to abandon evidence-based arguments and basically just say, there is definitely no God, I'm not going to listen to anything you have to say, nothing will change my mind, to which we said, it sounds like you want atheism to be a religion. And he immediately chimes in with, that's absolutely right. And if you watch the episode that he calls in on, you'll see the look on Sam's face. Because that's not what we expected him to say. And when I said, in a lot of ways, Gary wants us to be the anti-Ray Comfort, who's that televangelist who is famous for the banana argument for God. And Gary responds going, yes, that's absolutely it. I want to be that. And now I said, it sounds like you want us to turn your brain off. And he's like, yes, it's absolutely it. So Gary, I'm going to raise the ante a bit here and say that you want us to be like the atheist Fred Phelps. And I want to see if you'll buy into that, because as later on in this email, it's going to sound a lot more like that. Jesus, Gary, come on. I mean, it's like a Michael Scott level of self-awareness here. This is not what it is. It's the reason that there's no evidence for God, that's why I don't believe. It's not because God is harmful. And I think he needs to learn how to separate the harm religion does with the actual faith, the truth quotient of the ontological claims you're making.
Right.
Those are completely indifferent. It's like I have a friend, Paul, who's a liberal Christian. He believes in a much nicer God than people like Pat Robertson do. Yet there's no evidence for his God either. Even if everything was sunshine and puppy dogs and daffodils, there's still no evidence. It can be wonderful and perfect.
Right. So let's go on and we'll try to quickly burn through. He says, don't look at the causes of religious harm. Look at the results and make your conclusions from them. Well, I think we should always try to look at things in context. So I think just looking at the causes of things might lead you to jumping to certain conclusions that may not be there. If you don't actually understand the cause, looking at the results, if you don't look at you don't understand the causes, I think you're going to have a pretty impoverished view of what's happening in the world. I don't agree with you when you say that I'm mistaking the harm done by religion and a belief in a God. Belief in a God results in conflict and death. I mean, it's a pretty absolute statement for him to make. There are plenty of people who live their lives as a religious and don't end up dying or killing people because of it. I am also prepared to become the first atheist martyr by picketing churches, mosques, and synagogues, and a sandwich board saying, quote, there are definitely no gods, stop wasting your lives, unite in atheism, unquote.
I said, that's the anti-Fred Phelps.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I think there are reasons to protest. Like, I'm happy with protesting the Pope for his direct involvement in covering up pedophile priests and shuffling them around to get new victims. His signature is on papers moving those guys around. So I'm fine protesting him. But just screaming at believers and saying there's absolutely no God, I'm going to be, you know, there's a stand-up comedian once who had a thing where he's making fun of the most recent Batman movie where Batman makes a thing like, to battle fear, you must become fear. And I'm like, so basically Gary's doing this equivalent saying that to fight religion, he must become religion.
Right.
That he must make the same sort of, you know, baseless assertions, unwillingness to hear other points of view, non-evidence-based, just straight out, like, I'm going to stick my fingers in my ear and say, la, 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 la. It's just, it's amazing. And he's just going to eventually, like Fred Phelps is. Fred Phelps is not going to try to change anyone's mind. He's just like, I'm going to go out and be a dick.
Yeah. I'll try to finish up here just so we can put a close on it. He says, this is his following up to being the picketer. The chances are I will come to harm, but what a way to go out.
Oh, Jesus.
Proving that religion is nothing more than a power-grabbing thuggery. If I do die, I'm really hoping that there is an afterlife because I will kick God's ass for all the suffering he or she has caused on earth. And if I go straight to hell for being an atheist, then I'm going to kick the devil's ass for doing a crap job of destroying God. And I will take his job and do it properly. God is hopefully crapping himself because his number is being called by me, Gary the Livid Dogmatic Atheist. You know, when I read this, I was like, is this Poe? Is he pulling
is
our
this, leg? Is this the point where he reveals him, he pulls off the Scooby-Doo mask and says, I'm faking the whole time? Because it's
for a guy who's so certain that there isn't a God, he certainly is hedging his bets that there is an afterlife, a heaven, and a hell. And he's definitely getting a plan for making it
happen. He's going to go all Chuck Norris on Yahweh. And it's just like, come on. Gary, if you definitely believe there are no gods, why is this even a topic in this email? It's not like, just in case I ever have to fight Spider-Man, here is my plan. It's like, no, it's not at all likely. Come on. Do you believe in gods or not? Because if you don't, this is like something a 13-year-old, this is the same thing, that childish sort of Satanist contrarian thing, like, oh, I'm going to beat up God, and I'm going to beat up Satan, too, and I'm going to take his job, and I'm going to do it right.
It does sound, I mean, the question here really is, does he actually believe in it? I mean, does he believe it? Does he even swallow what he's trying to sell, which is that there is definitely no gods, we should go out and we should shake people by the shoulders and say, stop believing this nonsense.
See, that's the thing, too, is
actually,
that
I think we have a caller, actually, if we can try to fit in another caller here in the last.
Sure.
So, David from Preston, Washington, do we got you? David. You're on the air.
Oh, hi.
How's it going?
I just wanted to say I agree with what you guys said about dogma. I mean, I'm someone who believes in God, and I absolutely am against most organized religions because they tend to drive me in places where my belief does not take me, my faith does not take me there.
So I just wanted to say,
sorry,
go ahead, David.
I really like the way you're approaching atheism, not as a dogma, not as a religion, but as just a simple statement of what you believe in.
Yeah, for me, it's a question of whether it's true or not, and whether there's sufficient evidence. I do agree with Gary, the guy we just talked about, in one way, which is I do think that religion and belief in the supernatural and other stuff without evidence is harmful. But I separate it from whether it's true, because it is possible for something to be both harmful and true. Like, if I don't like Kim Jong-il of North Korea, I'm not going to pretend that he doesn't exist, because I don't like the connotations of him being real. But I do appreciate it. I think that dogma is the real danger, and then I think the one thing that Gary, not to pick on him more, but the one thing he doesn't seem to understand is that the real harm in anything comes from just stating that something is real, refusing to hear any opposing opinions, refusing to consider the fact that even if it's a small possibility, that small possibility you could be wrong. Like, for instance, we talked about the definition of atheist and agnostic and said that they aren't mutually exclusive. I'm both an atheist and an agnostic. I don't know for sure whether a God exists, but I think that the possibility is so remote that I don't consider it a serious possibility.
So, David, if we can query you, what do you believe? What kind of God do you believe in, and why do you believe that?
I was originally raised, Mormon. And then went to Baptist, and I figured out after going bouncing around through a couple of churches that none of them has all my answers for me. And I believe that I can find my answers by myself. I think I'm capable of that. I'm a thinking person.
So you do believe that there...
how to deal with people just by myself. I don't really need a book to tell me. Although I still believe there is a God out there. Looking out for me.
And what is your reasoning to hold that belief that there is a God out there?
Well, mostly it's because I don't want to think that there isn't.
Well, can you understand why we'd find that an unsatisfactory answer, though? I mean, that wanting something isn't the same as it being true. Can you understand why we wouldn't find that's a satisfactory answer?
Oh, absolutely. But the thing is, I mean, how do you go through life without believing in something?
Oh, I believe in a lot of some things, just not deities. I bet you I believe in a lot of the same things you do, just not that one thing.
I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with that, too, for the most
part. And I don't need you to believe in God.
Well, I appreciate that.
Well, we definitely like your perspective, and we love the chance to be able to talk to sincere theists that can actually understand and comprehend our approach to taking it. And I think I heard a little bit of maybe some of the canards out there in saying that we believe in nothing. I mean, obviously we don't believe in nothing. We are responsible, productive, friendly members of society who want to live in relative harmony with the people around us, and they don't want to have our stuff stolen, don't want to be injured or killed. And we would like it if there were less strife in the world. And coming to that conclusion doesn't necessitate us having a divine inspiration for our morality. It's just a desire to live in a world where bad things don't happen to you unnecessarily, and people who do bad have actual real world consequences here on this earth.
Yeah, and who don't use things you can't prove as a reason to push rules on people.
Absolutely.
But even then, I think that sometimes, even if you're not pushing it on people, like I said, if the screen door holes are big enough, people can push stuff on you, which is the other downside, is that, like I mentioned with the Iraqi police who are having these dowsing rods.
Yeah.
It's just kind of crazy, and it does become this sort of Achilles heel that somebody can take advantage of, that wanting to believe in something like I would love to believe that I was a millionaire and that if I wanted to right now, I could give $5 million to Seattle Children's Hospital. I could throw money at SCAN and solve all its financial potential funding problems.
Yeah, but I just think so.
Yeah, it's not. And the downside, I mean, that's the thing, is that there are consequences of belief, that beliefs do direct your actions. Like, if I really believed I was a millionaire, I could quit my job tomorrow, and if I'm wrong about being a millionaire, that could really screw up my life.
Yep.
So do you
I
have
any... I just wanted to call in and let you know that there are people who believe in God that don't consider you the enemy.
Oh, I appreciate
Good.
That.
We really
Thank
like
you.
That, and we don't consider you enemies either.
Yeah.
Thanks, David.
All right.
Have a good day.
Talk to you guys.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
I don't know if we have enough time to play the Dan Ariely clip. I don't know. Should we try?
How much time do we have?
We've got seven minutes or so.
7 minutes.
Let's try. Can we fire that up?
Let's do it.
So I think the world would actually be quite terrible if everybody would be perfectly rational. And you know, when you ask people this question initially, they say, oh yes, I want everybody to be rational. But the fact is that I picked the title, The Upside of Irrationality, because I think there's a lot of wonderful things about irrationality. I'll give you two examples. The first one is, imagine that you left your wallet on your desk and you went out for lunch. What are the odds that somebody will steal it? Right? And now think about what are the odds that somebody would steal it if everybody you worked with was perfectly rational. If everybody was constantly doing the cost-benefit analysis. If that's all what people were doing, they would pass by your desk, they would say, hey, nobody's here, nobody's looking, I can steal this and have no chance of being caught, let me do that. Right? In fact, if we lived in a society where everybody was just maximizing their own self-interest all the time, it would be quite a terrible place to live. Here's another example. Imagine a game we call the trust game, and then I'll tell you about the trust game with revenge. So imagine two players, player A and player B.
So
and the trust game
was,
looks like this.
That was Dan Ariely. He's an economist. And this is sort of buttresses with our discussion here. Because I thought that was a pretty poor way to look at rationality. And something that we get thrown out an awful lot, which is that we'll say, oh, well, you have a, you know, oh, you're perfectly rational and there's no emotion, there's no compassion, if it's all totally logic, then everything's cold and it's completely impersonal.
It's sort of a straw man that looks like Mr. Spock from Star Trek.
Right, and I think that's terrible because he uses the, and this is an academic. I mean, this is a guy who is an economist, and I think it's behavioral economics. I think is what he's in, and he's equating rationality with
blatant self-interest.
Yeah, and when can you say that being rational? Excludes the possibility that part of being rational is calculating the potential harm to other people around you and to what kind of a society it would be if you behaved in such a boring way.
And not just that, if I stole somebody's wallet, whether I get caught or not, I still have to live with myself. I still have to live with guilt. And also, if everyone was in that basic self-interest, I'm just going to take something from somebody else regardless of the consequences of what it could do to that other person, totally cutting out any sense of basic empathy, where empathy can be completely rational. For instance, if I live in a world where everyone is stealing, I'm going to have to be on guard and watching my back all the time.
Right.
That's just exhausting. To be that paranoid and that guarded all the time,
right.
That any possible sense of intimacy or trust I could get from another person would be suspect.
Right. I don't know. I mean, I don't. We could maybe make some kind of argument about rationality, about compassion being an irrational exercise. But I think compassion is completely irrational because it's an attempt to try to quantify the state, to try to determine the state of someone else. By pairing it against your own state and projecting what their experience might be like on yours, and that can be a perfectly rational enterprise.
Yeah.
It doesn't just need to be. It would make me sad. It can be. It can be. I can project all of the bad things that would happen if I let this happen to this other person.
Yeah.
How it would feel to me. So I think that's one of the arguments that we sort of get is
but
you live
also,
in this cold, unfeeling. Atheist and
but even the cost benefit thing, a really good example is if you've ever seen piranhas tear apart something, they don't attack each other. And why don't? Because if they were only doing it alone, they wouldn't survive. Our human race wouldn't survive to have a building where I could go out for lunch during the day and have a wallet that I could leave behind and have a sort of economic system where I could have that much material wealth in such a small wallet in the first place. That would be impossible if I wasn't in a society that required us to be cooperative.
Right, right. So that one I picked up a while ago, and I think really well encompasses that canard, I think, of morality and what have you. And of course, we've received it twice by calls, which is
you
believe in nothing. I mean, I think this is not going to be the last time that we have to deal with this. But obviously, we believe pretty much the same thing that everyone else does. That's my stock answer.
Minus one.
Yeah.
That's basically right. It. That's all it really comes down to is that we have political beliefs, we have moral beliefs, we have favorite sports teams, we have least favorite sports teams, we have favorite movies, we have favorite works of art, favorite music. We love our families, we love our kids. We just lack this one thing. It's like, think of it this way. Imagine there's somebody out there that believes that the Hindu gods are real, because there's like 2 billion of them. Or is it a billion?
I have no idea.
In India?
No idea.
They believe a lot of the same as you do, but they just have a different ontological, oof, they believe in something else.
Right.
So, but if you'd like to discuss this stuff with us, we are going to be meeting at the Ram at 4:30. The Ram is a restaurant at Northgate Mall. Please check us out. You can have a great conversation. Talk to us, challenge us, but don't come to scream or yell at us or to hit us with a crowbar repeatedly while yelling filth. That's not cool. And the restaurant will not like you from it.
Yes.
You will probably not be eating at that Ram anymore.
we often have a great time. There's plenty of beer and food to be had. Us and the crew will be there. And the most important part about this is the feedback we get from, I think a couple times ago we got a woman who called in on our program and came in, and it was one of the first times she'd been out of the house except to go to the grocery store and the doctor for a year and a half. Since her husband died. Meeting those kind of things are incredible. We want to meet you. We think you're incredible. So please come and join us.
Yeah. And Gary, what happened? You were supposed to call us, man.
We know it's 11:30 there, but...
You can steal your girlfriend's cell phone and call us from the barn again. Come on, dude.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for Ask an Atheist. We'll see you next week. Have a good day, guys.